Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's Scary Movie Month extra, extra bonus episode. That's right. Three shows in 1 week, people. I am joined once again by Stephanie Crawford. Stephanie, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here as well.
I am excited that you are back. We haven't actually talked voice to voice since you were on for Junesploitation. We've talked online quite a bit, but not actually spoken since Junesploitation. And since then, you have joined the ranks of every horror podcast on the internet. So that's great news.
Yeah, sure. Every single one. I know it feels that way, Patrick.
It feels
not
it
in true.
In the best way.
Now, a little me goes the long way. I get it.
There are so many more opportunities to hear you. Where can people hear you?
You can hear me on the Screamcast and also on Splat House.
And that's very exciting because those are both really good shows with really good people doing it. So I'm excited that you're part of it because you are also a really good person. It would suck if you joined a garbage podcast.
Ooh, name the garbage ones.
I would rather not, but there are so many.
Okay.
There are so many. I keep trying to find, like, what's a horror podcast I can tolerate? Turns out there aren't that many.
No, it's true. Like, I'll sometimes just search by a movie or a topic. And I like one of them, like their gimmick was they were actually really proud of being super misogynistic. And like,
I wonder if that's the same one I listened to.
It might be. It's like a badge of honor. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I found one. They were talking about the Funhouse. So I thought, well, of course I'm going to listen to that. And I made it about 10 minutes before the misogyny just pushed me away. On this episode, we are going to be talking about Return of the Living Deads 1, 2, and 3, and not going any further than that, because as we just talked about 5 minutes ago when we tried to record this last time, I haven't seen any past three. I haven't seen any of the, like, straight-to-video ones.
Okay, well, in that few minutes, I actually wrote a thesis on Raising
Damn.
The Grave, and that's kind of all I want to talk about, so.
Well, okay, but it makes sense, because I know that one of your areas of expertise is raves in general.
Mm-hmm.
Rave culture.
I like how you could barely get expertise out. I think that really sums it up right there.
Oh, you're an authority on glow stick dancing, I believe. I know so little about raves, I'll be honest. I think most of what I know about raves was from, like, an episode of 90210.
All right. Well, I'll tell you right here and now, the most authentic portrayal of a rave is in Freddy versus Jason in that cornfield.
Oh, okay.
Documentary.
Because of all of the murder?
Yeah. And, you know, corn farmers are like, yeah, go ahead. Enjoy yourselves, kids.
Rave it up. YOLO, kids. YOLO. So we are going to be talking about the first three Return of the Living Dead movies. But, of course, there are still a few days left in October, which means there are still a few days for you to participate in the Scary Movie Challenge. Every time you watch a scary movie in the month of October, in the few remaining days that are left, that is, please go to fthismovie.com and leave a 7-word review for that scary movie. We are trying to best last year's record. We got about 3,100 7-word reviews. I'm not sure we're going to make it this year unless everybody really pushes themselves these last few remaining days. So this is your call to action, everyone. Start watching movies. Start writing 7-word reviews.
But, you know, if you offer maybe like an ice cream social, you might be able to get a few more people doing it. That's just a friendly
suggestion. What would be the central location for this ice cream social?
Look, this isn't my thing, all right? I'm just trying to help out.
Oh, wow. Wow. So quickly, you're like, I'm an idea person, okay? I'm not a details person.
I like to throw bombs and then run away as fast as possible.
Scoping out a few cornfields for this ice cream social. I've got my eye on a handful of cornfields.
Yeah, so write those reviews and bring those glow sticks, everybody. It's going to be a good time.
While we're talking about seven-word reviews, let's share some of our recent favorites. Stephanie, would you please do me the honor of going first?
Okay. My first one is probably my favorite. It was actually hard to narrow it down. People are a little too clever, made me a little jealous, but I'm trying to move past that. I'm an adult. This one is for the original, the real, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Still beats up your dad's horror movie. And that is by a young Patrick Brumley.
I know his work.
Yeah.
He's a real asshole.
Well, I can't comment on that, but you can write a good seven-word review.
I showed that to a class of students last night. It went about as well as I expected, but we could talk about that in just a minute when we talk about what we've seen lately. I have one from Michael Shaw. Wes Craven's Mirror. Meta before meta realized it was meta.
Whoa. I almost said meta, but I didn't. That's a good one, though. My second one is from Nathan Norton. And as a really big Mario Bava fan, I appreciated this one. It's for Lisa and the Devil. Who let Kojak get a pilot's license?
What is your favorite Mario Bava movie?
Oh, Blood and Black Lace. No contest.
No contest, really?
No contest.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I was a fan of his before, but I was, I think before that, I mainly saw his gothic ones.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got to like the super colorful giallo, I was, that was it for me. And that was the one that changed everything.
Okay. That's certainly my favorite, I think, of his, well, it's not my favorite of his color period, because Whipping the Body and Kill Baby Kill, but both of those count as like the gothic period, right?
Yeah, he dipped back into it a few times. That's interesting. Kill Baby Kill. That one's a little divisive, I've noticed.
Really?
Yeah. Recently, though, I've seen, mainly because the Kino disc just came out and people are saying, like, I wasn't expecting this.
I did not buy the Kino disc because I'm holding out for the Arrow version because it's got lots.
Oh, of course.
Well, it's got lots of bonus stuff on
it. That's British.
And pretty much all of my other Bava discs are from Arrow, and I'm just OCD enough to feel like they all need to be from the same label.
Well, as the patron of Bromley Video, I respect that.
Thank you.
The kind of idiosyncrasies I appreciate.
That's right, the sole patron. Stuart Gordon says of Videodrome, James Woods can't stomach one Blondie video.
Oh, I saw that one. I
that
really
one's
liked
amazing.
That one. I almost picked that one, but I didn't want to go on a James Woods tangent.
I mean, it's a pretty short tangent. It goes like this. Fuck James Woods forever.
Fuck James Woods. Yeah. I have an old magazine in my garage. I don't know why, but it's him on the cover with Sean Young. And they had like this terrible torrid romance.
Yes.
And I don't know. For some reason, I've been thinking back on that random issue of People Magazine lately.
Because years they had kind of a, you know, an ugly public breakup, and he kind of went around and made it sound like, oh, Sean Young is the crazy one. She's unstable. I can't be with her, right? And she goes on the Tonight Show dressed as Catwoman, and everyone's like, well, Sean Young is crazy. But now we're finding out that, like, oh, maybe Sean Young wasn't the problem, everyone. Maybe we shouldn't have just immediately sided with the man who turned out to be a pile of garbage.
But no tangents here.
No tangents. No tangents. Just seven-word reviews.
My next one's from Marcus Killer, and it's for Amsterdam. And it's a much better movie than Frank Fucked.
I have not seen Amsterdammed, have you?
No, I need to see it soon. But I'm excited to, but no, I haven't yet. But just the play on the titles,
Yes, oh,
I had
absolutely.
to give it a shout
And
out.
what is the great name of the, oh, damn it. The director of Amsterdammed has a great name.
Dick Moss.
There it is. It's Dick Moss. There it is. Thank you. I was not coming up with it. Okay, let
That's
me
what
find
she
another
said.
one here. Jan Peters.
Sorry.
Jan Peters says of Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood, Mike Pomero's favorite. Apparently, Jason also entered the editing room.
Oh, I like
Ah, you
that.
burnt. Yeah.
I get it. I went to Richard Tasker talking about The Craft, which you re recently talked to Allie about. Great episode.
Yes.
And this one I just found relatable. Teen crush on Fairuza Balk, still valid. So true.
I don't know. I mean, whatever. I can't judge another's crush, but
No, you can't.
no,
Move
and I
on.
wouldn't, and I don't, and I am moving on right now. Alex Keel, I think is how to pronounce it, of A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child. These friends will protect Alice and Dead.
Oh. Okay. Mac McIntyre with the dark. More movie monsters should have laser eyes.
I've not yet seen
This
The
is true.
Dark, but I know the story about the laser eyes.
So, do you agree or disagree on the laser eyes?
Well, I don't know because I haven't seen it yet, but you know that The Dark started out as a Tobe Hooper movie.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he started directing it and quit or was pushed out. There are two different versions of the story. It was not an alien movie about laser eyes, and then a producer decided it should be basically after it was wrapped, and so went back in and added lasers coming out of eyes. And I haven't seen it, but I'm excited to check it out. I know it's on like Amazon Prime and Code Red put it out, but I have not yet gotten around to watching it because I've been watching all these other movies this month. William Lanham of Jaws the Revenge. Sorry, thought it was shitty movie month.
Zing. Oh, there's so many good ones. Okay, I'll go with Joseph Finn with Ghost Watch, which I'm a really big fan of. Weirdly disturbing, more truthful than Fox News.
I have not seen Ghost Watch. Do I need to seek this out?
Yes, well, okay. It came out in the early 90s. I think it was the BBC. It was British television. And they played it straight like it was an actual, oh, we're going to a haunted house expose. It'll be fun. And it wasn't real, obviously, but they played it completely straight. They used the actual anchor people. And I guess it caused people really reacted to it. And ghosts get to me. If it's a well done thing, nothing gets to me like ghosts. And right when things were really ramping up in it, one of the lights in my hallway started flickering for no reason. And
Not no
I did
reason.
not sleep that night. Okay, ghosts. Hallway ghosts from England.
Ghost reason. What, in your opinion, is the best ghost movie ever made?
Oh, jeez. See, that's rough.
Yeah, now you're on the spot.
I'm gonna have to be a little obvious and kind of well, it's Poltergeist.
Okay.
It's Poltergeist. I love that movie. I love everything about that movie. But if you want to go a little more modern, I would say The Conjuring.
Okay. Both good. I like both of
Yeah, from
those.
my mind.
Yeah. I have like one or two more, I think. TJ Mackey 432 says of Get Out, the sunken place isn't looking so bad.
That's a good one. Okay, this one is from a young gentleman named Rob DiCristino for In the Mouth of Madness. Man, Sam Neill has seen some shit.
My very last one comes from John Hillman of Candyman, which we just did a podcast for. Was promised a golden ticket, given bees.
Yep, I have that one
Nice. Yeah.
too. Okay, I'll do one more. Kyle H for the final girls. This is funny. Wait, why am I crying? And he did a contraction with
Are you a
Wyma, which I
Oh, very
appreciate.
nice. That's
But yeah, I
well, because
think
that's the move
I teared up three
when you're trying to keep it to
times.
7 words. During the final girls?
During the final girls, I teared up about three times.
Okay.
So I related to that one.
The Bette Davis eyes dance is very emotional.
Don't start again, Patrick, please.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to make you cry. If I really was trying to make you cry, I would start singing Bette Davis eyes, and no one wants that.
I do. Just think of the ratings.
Literally, no.
Hey,
The do
maybe
podcasts have
guys,
ratings?
Ice Cream Social, he might sing Bette Davis eyes
Ooh,
if we can get those numbers up.
a little Kim Carnes karaoke.
Oh, I'm nodding. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I
no, that's
thought
fine.
maybe I'm wrong.
I forget that you only give nonverbals to alliteration. I forget that that was one of your rules.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
Before we talk about these Return of the Living Dead movies, have you seen anything scary lately?
I have seen a crap ton of scary lately because it's October and I'm an American.
What have been some of the standouts for you?
Well, as you know, when I'm here, it's a Code Red podcast.
That's right.
And I took advantage of Ronin Flicks. They just did a quick little sale. So I took advantage of that and I watched a good deal of that today. I got to Hide and Go Shriek finally.
What did you think of that?
I mean, look, you could pick out a lot wrong with it. Sure you could. Just go room to room. No, I loved it. Listen, if you just get a lot of unusual characters and unusual costumes since the 80s, and they're all pretty sweet and personable, and you just kind of kill them off, I'm there, man. I just love slashers. I love.
I'm with you 100%. I watched it maybe a year ago. Mike came over to watch some. So much fun with it because it's the only slasher I can think of that's set entirely in a furniture store. You could never possibly predict who the killer is, I feel safe saying. And I thought there were a few. I remember a scene on an elevator being a standout.
Yeah, no, it was I guess you could do a nice double feature with one of the mannequins with it. No, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I would go mannequin one. Yeah.
Ah, you're a Kim can could Kim
Cattrall.
Cattrall.
I don't know. I think Mannequin 2 is pretty unwatchable as much as I have affection. I
What?
have great affection for Ragsdale and for Christy Swanson, but I think Mannequin 2.
Hollywood
Oof.
shines. He shines
It
in
is
that
rough.
movie.
I, for the longest time, by the way, and I still believe I'm right about this. When they first started turning movies into musicals, like around, what was the first one to really break? Like The Producers, maybe? I don't know. I feel like it might have even been before this. I have long argued that Mannequin would make a perfect musical because you have every, like, how to succeed in business without really trying type. You have James Spader as the Bud Frump, and you have Estelle Getty as, like, she gets her own little number, and the whole thing, is basically one set because you do the whole thing in a department store. I truly believe that somebody could make a great musical out of Mannequin.
I fully agree. It's times like this I wish I was a very wealthy producer
It's times like
because
this
I
I wish I
bank all
had
that grit.
any talent and could write that, but sadly, no.
You're an idea man like me. It's a lot in life.
So what else besides hide and go shriek?
Okay, well, this one isn't a straight horror, but because we were just talking about Mannequin and Mannequin 2, the underrated gem it is, Christy Swanson, I just recently discovered Highway to Hell
Oh, okay.
with her.
Yeah.
Completely new to me, which kind of blows my mind because it's completely in my wheelhouse. You just have like kind of an insane genre bending film set in the desert with an amazing cast. You have like the entire Stiller family in there for some reason. Who knows? But wow, I've already seen it twice. It's wonderful.
Wow. You're not
Wait.
messing around. And that's written by
No.
Academy Award-winning screenwriter Brian Helgeland.
Yeah, no, it's everyone was really talented in it. It just and the special effects are amazing. Yeah, it just seemed like kind of a weird little movie that kind of appeared and disappeared, but I guess that's where my taste level is, everybody. I think Highway to Hell is amazing.
No, I think there's a lot of people who would agree with you. I definitely watched it on cable a lot as a kid. Particularly, I think I definitely went through like a pretty long Christy Swanson thing, and so I was just seeking out every Christy Swanson movie I could find. Although I still have never seen Flowers in the Attic, so go figure.
Oh boy. Well, that'll take care of it.
I think that's why I was avoiding it, honestly, because I knew some stuff about it. I was like, you know what? I don't really need that in my head. I'll just watch Mannequin 2 again.
Yeah, if you want to talk about true horror, where just something that kind of slowly poisons your soul with a sadness, see Flowers in the Attic.
All right. They need to put that on the poster.
Yeah,
Poisons
see.
your soul with sadness. Stephanie Crawford, every horror podcast on the internet.
Oh, any jabs in?
No jabs, no jabs. Anything else?
Sure. I also saw recently so many, actually. I'm trying to narrow it down. I did finally see The Return of Dracula.
Okay. How was that?
It was adorable. Is basically what if a fairly polite Dracula, not charming, but fairly polite, landed in a very polite suburb in the late 50s or early 60s? Yeah, it was your basic story. But I thought it was very charming, and there's one scene in it of blood where it goes into color. It's a black and white film, and they just do one scene of color. I thought that was great. I just have a big soft spot for adorable horror movies. And The Return of Dracula fits snugly right in there.
What are some other examples of adorable horror movies?
Adorable. Well, I'll admit it's normally older ones where they're not allowed to show a lot of
Okay.
gore, or anything, just kind of working around the social mores of the day. Yeah, I love my gore. I
I'm
love
trying to.
flying heads, but I think it's cute people in like a little sock hop skirt are kind of spooked and they faint right away and they say, "Okay, she needs to rest. We'll go into a cave and we'll just figure this out."
Have you ever seen Monster on Campus, I believe it's called?
No, I don't think I have.
That might be up your alley as far as adorable horror is concerned, because that's right in that late 50s period.
Okay, the title's pretty cute.
Yeah, it's like
Does
so.
he wear a Letterman's jacket?
Sadly, no.
Aw.
He's, I believe, a professor. He's not a student. But
All right, elbow
it's
patches, I
like,
can work with that.
yeah, right? It's like surprisingly good. It's not, you watch something like that expecting it to be like just kind of campy and goofy, and there are elements of that, but it's actually just a decent movie overall, which is kind of fun.
All right, great, I'll add to the list.
I saw a Code Red movie, since we're going to talk Code Red, of course, that I'd never seen before called The Forest,
Okay.
which is a slasher from like 1982 set in the woods, as you might imagine from the title. And everything about it is sort of a generic early 80s slasher, save for the fact that the characters are adults instead of teenagers, And then it throws in a weird wrinkle where there are also these ghost kids who follow the final girl around and essentially fill her in on all of the details. Like, oh, so-and-so just got hurt. And she's like, oh, no, can you take me to him? Yeah, sure. And they do. It's bananas.
We have nothing else going right on, sure.
So the inclusion of this weird supernatural element, again, the whole thing is like somewhat clunky in the way that it's put together, but I was incredibly entertained by it. Yes. Okay. You got it. Well, yeah, we got to keep this just between us because people are going to start asking for stuff. And yeah, the only other movie that I'll really talk about is the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I watched yesterday with a class and had just revisited it the day that Tobe Hooper passed away. And so this was my first time watching it since, I don't know, August 23rd or whatever day that was. And it was interesting because I was much more aware of how it was working because I was watching it with a room full of people who had never seen it. Now, admittedly, it's not a great environment in which to see that movie for the first time, but I do think it worked on a couple of them. There was one jump scare that people actually jumped, and I could tell that they were getting they were bothered by the end of the movie in terms of, you know, Marilyn Burns constantly screaming and the constant noise of the chainsaw. Just the last 30 minutes of that movie are so relentless. And, you know, it's fascinating because I was watching it work on them while also getting angry because the way that these students were processing that was like to laugh or to like be like, oh, it's so annoying. But like, because they don't know how else to handle the fact that it's upsetting them. And so they try to push it away. And so I was mad that they were doing that instead of just letting it work on them. But at the same time, I appreciated the fact that the movie was so clearly working on them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I figure that film would mostly be shown in a classroom setting for people who are maybe going there specifically to study horror films and thriller films.
Yeah.
So your first time.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, again, these are people who don't watch movies and don't care about movies. And
everything you told me about that class so far, I'm not the biggest fan of the students.
Well, I might not be either, but I decided to devote all of October to horror movies and was originally going to show Night of the Living Dead because of sort of its place in history. And then when Tobe Hooper passed away, I was like, no, fuck that. I'm going to show him Texas Chainsaw. But I've just given up on like trying to think of something that they might like or respond to. And so last week I was like, no, fuck you guys. I'm going to show you Suspiria. I know you won't like it, but I don't care. So because of nothing else, I get to watch Suspiria.
I both want to encourage you and I'm also kind of digging the nihilistic bucket. We're going
to
watch.
Well, they're not ever going to be exposed to it anywhere else. So why not expose them to it? Because maybe it clicks for one person, you know, that's my hope anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm sure it did. Good for you. I'm jealous.
You.
I wish I was in that class.
Well, all you have to do is fly out once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And you can absolutely, you know what? I'll let you audit the class. I won't even give you a grade. You could just audit the class.
Okay. I assume I'm not going to be paid.
Oh, no, no, no. Why would you be paid for this?
Okay.
Paid to take the class? No, this makes no sense. All right. So do you want to talk about some Return of the Living Dead movies?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
Okay. This was something that you had thrown out. We were trying to think of, hey, what can we talk about? And this was something that you had thrown out, like maybe talking about these first three Return of the Living Dead movies. And I didn't ask in our conversation because I just was like, yeah, sure, let's do that. But what was it about these movies that made you either want to revisit them or to talk about them on the show?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be honest with you.
I appreciate
that. It wasn't.
All I ask for is honesty and that you fly out once a week. That's all I'm asking.
If there's an ice cream social, that's reasonable. All right. There wasn't a whole lot of deep thought put into it. That I've seen them all many times over the years. I appreciate every single one. Yes, even two, to varying degrees for varying reasons. And fascinating when you see them all, and then you see three. And kind of the jump they made there. Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's interesting to see kind of a small arc there. It changed so much, but still so enjoyable, in my opinion. What about you? How do you feel?
I like the first one a lot. It's not a movie that I ever like would put on my list of favorites, and I know that it is a movie that is beloved by so many people. It's not even that I have any problems with it. I love so much of what it does. In terms of combining sort of the punk aesthetic with the zombie movie, and it invents the whole mythos of them wanting to eat brains. You know, that comes right from Dan O'Bannon. I'm less enthralled with the second one than maybe you are, but we can talk about that. And I rewatched three. I remember watching three when it came out on, you know, VHS in the 90s. And then I didn't see it for at least 20 years. And then I just rewatched it when that Vestron Blu-ray came out. And I am of the mind, and maybe this is a controversial thing to say, that if it was not called Return of the Living Dead 3, if it was called something else, perhaps Rave to the Grave, if it had a different title, I truly think that people would be talking about it as like one of the real high points of 90s horror.
Okay.
I think it's really good. I think it's really strong. I think the effects are incredible, and I think it's ahead of its time in a lot of ways in terms of the Mindy Clark character. And I think it gets maybe overlooked a little bit because it's, oh, it's Return of the Living Dead 3, and it's like the Halloween 3 or the Friday 5 of the franchise where, oh, they just go in a totally different direction, and it has nothing to do with the previous two movies.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting because from my experience talking to other horror fans over the years, it does have a really solid fan base. There's a good amount of people who are very passionate about it. I think maybe there's a little bit of the Yuzna pedigree attached to that, that I think maybe if you're a huge horror fan, you see that name and you're like, oh, okay, they got a real horror guy to do it. So I'll check it out. But yeah, normally something like that, something that would go way off script in the third entry would get a lot of shit, like Halloween 3 originally did.
Right.
But I gotta tell you, it definitely had its cult fans.
I
probably mostly through the video release.
But okay. These cult fans have shunned me, and they have not spoken to me because I'm out here wondering, like, where are all my Return of the Living Dead 3 fans at? And they are having their own little...
Yeah. You've been walking the streets calling out.
Yes! Just yelling it out. Where are my Mindy Clark heads at?
Maybe
and
it's a regional thing.
Where
I'm
my
over here
I, in the West. I have a shirt that says, where are my Yuz nerds? And no one ever responds.
I don't know why.
Oh, where are my Yuz nerds? Yeah, so maybe out west it does have a better reputation. I don't know. Or maybe I'm just not talking to the right people, honestly. But I just feel like even in conversations when people are sort of reassessing the 90s, which has been happening a lot lately, because for years it was like, oh, the 90s were terrible and horror was awful in the 90s. And then in the last few years, people have been saying, well, actually, you know, this was good and this was good and this was good. And maybe the 90s weren't so bad. I don't ever hear Return of the Living Dead 3 as part of that conversation.
That, well, it's true. It's not up there with like Scream or Candyman or anything, but
no, obviously. Right.
I've always been able to find people to talk about it. Maybe it's because I usually wear a jacket over my Yuz Nerd shirt. It's not like intimidating people right out of the gate.
Could it be because you have shards of glass and safety pins in your face?
It gotta be me. People sense that authenticity.
I mean, the first movie is a ton of fun, and it's fascinating to me that it came out the same year as Day of the Dead, because there's such a split sort of in terms of here's where Romero is taking the series, and then here's where, you know, sort of John Russo takes the series, but not really, because Dan O'Bannon, you know, took it over. But Return of the Living Dead also originally intended to be a Tobe Hooper movie, and he was going to do it in 3D.
I have to say, I can't wait to read about this in the book you're gonna write about Tobe Hooper.
Oh, that's never
I
happening.
can cry. I can cry on your podcast, man. I'll do it. The people have spoken. We want this
Wait
book.
for me to start singing Bettie Davis Eyes before you cry.
All right. Like
I
a
want to
dude,
feel
I just
like
hit
I
my
had
wall.
I want to feel like I had something to do with it. So, you know, the first movie is like super fun and entertaining, and I appreciate that there are moments that try to be genuinely horrifying. You know, I think the Tar Man is genuinely horrifying and kind of scary the way that that's revealed. I think the woman on the gurney, you know, with the little spine tail, talking about why the
The fluid leaking out.
Yes, we're talking about why they eat brains is horrifying in a way that isn't scary as much as it is like sad.
The pain kills the pain.
Yeah, so I think
Oh,
there's some really neat tonal shifts that happen in that movie, because by the time we get to James Caan's fate, I'm always genuinely moved by that. And that's another aspect of the movie that I don't think gets talked about as much, because it does feel like a great big zombie party, you know, and the music is fun, and there's Linnea Quigley dancing naked in the rain, and everyone is all punked out with the exception of the two like new wave people, which is kind of a weird inclusion, and the, you know, the girl.
preppy.
Yes, right, the preppy girl. So there's all this stuff that's fun about it, but I think it also is doing some stuff that's really sophisticated, and I think that there are some performances, particularly James Caan and Clu Gulager,
Yes.
that make that movie so awesome.
I'm sorry, I love Clu Gulager so much. And he is wonderful in this.
Yeah, he is.
Him and Dong Calpha. Who's I think one of my favorite characters in film in this, as a mortician. I love the characters in this movie. I'm one of
Yeah.
the people who thinks it's basically a masterpiece.
Okay.
Just the perfect balance of humor and horror. Although I do think the Tar Man zombie is adorable and not horrifying.
Okay.
Well, when you first see him, it's startling, but
Right.
oh, he seems thrilled. He's like, I'm out of canister brains. Come on,
He does
everybody.
seem
Come on now, it's me.
excited, which is almost like a puppy when you
Yeah,
come home.
I
Yeah, that
appreciate
we
it.
don't often see that side of the undead.
I just think it's a lot of fun. I do like the mix of characters. We're not just stuck on the teenagers. We also see the older people who are kind of trying to juggle a zombie outbreak with like bureaucracy and what do I call my boss? Like, how do I deal with this? Oh, it's great.
It is. It's super.
Great. I think you should love it more than you do, frankly.
I am sorry, and I absolutely will watch it again. Again, it's one of these movies that, like, I watch it, I have so much fun with it, I don't have any complaints about it. It's just not a movie that clicks with me the way certain other movies do. But it's really fun. I know the last time I watched it, I think, was right after the Scream Factory movie came out, or the Scream Factory disc. And it was the most I'd ever enjoyed it, you know, and I've seen the movie a bunch of times. But yeah, I feel like even the most recent time, I liked it more than I ever had in the past. So maybe I'm like two viewings away from it being my favorite horror movie of all time.
Well, I'm just being a jerk. Like, I'll give you permission. You can like it
Thank you.
exactly the amount you'd like to like it. But I'll say I'm a okay. I need like a yes nerd version for the first one. I'm a fan O'Bannon, huh?
I like
Amen.
Fan O'Bannon. I feel like there's got
No, you don't.
No,
It's all right.
I
Thank
do.
you.
I'm trying to work fan into the word O'Bannon, but I don't like O'Fannon. You know, I don't think that's as good as fan O'Bannon.
Like how I call Klugulager Kluliger.
Gluliger.
Because I like to pretend I'm friends with him.
Well, this is fun. You're a total fan, O'Bannon, and I'm a Yuz nerd, so this is great.
Yeah, so who's going to speak up for part two? I
For
wonder.
Ken Wiederhorn, I'm good. This is going to be all you. I don't love part two. I think, although again, I will say, the last time I watched it, and I'm not super proud of this. I own the DVD, but I also bought, well, whatever. I bought a Blu-ray that was not 100% on the up and up because it included Return of the Living Dead Part 2 and Fright Night Part 2, both of which I own on DVD, but they're not the best versions. And there is no commercially available Blu-ray of either of these films. So I did. Anyway, so I watched my Blu-ray of it and liked it more than I ever had, but also didn't really like it very much. And I think a big part of it is, you know, it just repeats the first movie in so many ways. I think the humor is a little bit goofier and like a little bit dumber, if I can say, and I apologize because I know you kind of like this movie. But it doesn't have any of those great characters. Even James Caan and Tom Matthews returning, I don't think are able to sort of recapture the magic from the first movie. And it doesn't have any of those cool tonal shifts that Dan O'Bannon pulls off in the first movie. It's all just sort of this broad comedy.
Absolutely. It's the very clumsy version of it. Even with our returning beloved characters, they're like, "Great, we have you guys back." Now, what was the least fun part of the first one? Oh, when you were slowly being poisoned by Trioxin, and let's have that be all you do for the whole movie. Just keep moaning. Oh, that's terrible. And it's basically like they looked at the first one and said, "Okay, let's get not such a skilled writers they had, and let's add kids." Because what's not improved by that? No, it technically it's a clunker. I could point out a million things wrong with it. I'm not gonna defend it as a great film. It's just fun. And I remember renting it from Hastings in like the 90s when I was first getting into horror movies. So I have a soft spot for it. No, it's very clunky, it's very derivative, but it has some cute moments. It does have that kind of a fun Saturday night horror movie rental feeling to it. So I don't hate it like a lot of people do, but oh boy, oh, yeah, it has problems.
Yeah, I don't hate it either because I've just never felt strongly enough about it to hate it. Like, it's not a movie I even think about that often. I remember liking the poster. I remember wanting to see it.
Oh, the poster's
Yeah, I mean, it's
wonderful.
really cool. I remember really
Just
wanting
when
to
you thought
s
it was safe to be dead.
I remember
I
really
know
wanting
Megan
to
is
see
going to
it
love
as a
it.
kid because I saw like a commercial or a trailer, and it's the scene where the head rolls in and then starts talking or whatever. And that looked interesting to me. I like the idea of the zombies in the suburbs. I wish that it paid off as more than just like a dance number.
Yeah.
Which,
But you
I don't.
didn't see it coming, did you?
True. I was like, Wiederhorn, you
Hey.
genius. My memory, too, and I didn't have a chance to revisit it prior to this podcast, but I feel like Wiederhorn is on the commentary. When this came out on DVD. And I remember being like a doesn't he just kind of complain about like not being able to make the movie he wanted to make the whole time?
Yes.
That was my memory that he was not happy with the finished product, but that he blamed other people for the most part.
Of course.
And I was like, dude, you directed Meatballs 2. They should have given you carte blanche.
Yeah, you've proven yourself with the twos. I wonder if that's a trend, because there's the commentary for Wayne's World 2, And the director of that spent the whole time putting down Penelope Spheeris and talking about how much better his movie
Yes.
was than the first one. I'm like, really, fella? Really?
He may be mistaken
Yeah,
there.
it might be. So I wonder if this is what you have to do if you directed the second one without doing the first one.
Well, that's always a weird part. And I hardly ever have the time, honestly, anymore to listen to commentaries. Like when I first got into DVD, I had to watch every special feature and rewatch the movie with the commentary. And now, if it's something that I really want to hear, or if it's a person that I really love, of course I will. But on so many of these discs, like these retrospective featurettes have become so good that by the time I finish that, which will be, 30 minutes, I'm like, well, why am I going to listen to the commentary now? I feel like I got all the good stories from even more
Right.
participants. But the most frustrating kind of commentary for me is the one, like you're talking about with Wayne's World 2, where the person is praising a movie or taking credit for something, and you're just sitting there like, are you not seeing the movie that I'm seeing? I remember the Halloween 5. It's the French guy, Dominique something, Gerard, maybe. I don't know, but I just remember him talking about describing the dynamic between Michael Myers and Daniel Harris, using the cat and mouse metaphor as though no one had ever made that comparison before. Like he had just invented this idea of cat and mouse. And I was fascinated by it
Oh
because he was
boy.
so excited in his French exuberance to be like, Michael Myers is the cat and Jamie, she is the mouse, and the cat wants to catch the mouse. And I'm like, do you hear yourself right now? But it's very entertaining.
Maybe he
Maybe,
didn't think we had that in
maybe.
America. It was
In
a French
America,
conquest.
cats and mice get along. He had only seen recent episodes of Tom and Jerry, like
The streets
where
are
they're
made of
friends
cheese.
and they team up to like go to outer space and stuff.
I refuse to
That's a thing.
believe that's a thing. No.
It's a
Keep
thing.
that malarkey out of here, buddy.
I'm telling you. They just keep inserting them into like Tom and Jerry and the Wizard of Oz, Tom and Jerry and Willy Wonka. Because Warner Brothers is just, what else do we have laying around that we can ruin with
Oh,
Tom and
man.
Jerry?
Bring back a chin scratchy.
Right? And Poochie.
Well, I think he's still on his home planet.
He died on the way to his home
Oh no! Poor guy.
planet. So yeah, Return of the Living Dead 2 is it's a weird like Evil Dead 2 situation, not to compare the two
Whoa.
movies, where it's well because it's more of just a remake of the first movie that doubles down on the comedy. And Evil Dead 2 does that very successfully, and Return of the Living Dead 2 less so.
Yeah, it's almost like they went to a different part of town when where shit was going down, and it's just less interesting people going through the same thing. So the
Yeah.
adolescent zombie with braces, that's a scary concept. That was a good zombie right there.
Okay, so is that's not like the bully who becomes zombified, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. He's on the commentary too, like all grown up.
Thor, his name's Thor.
Thor, that's right. His name is Thor. I do give the movie credit for turning a kid into a zombie, it is still sort of a taboo in horror films to kill off a kid or to do something, mean to a kid or turn a kid into a monster. And so I do give Return of the Living Dead 2 credit for doing that.
Okay, so we have some grudging credit. This is good. I feel like we're really coming together here. Even though
What
we
I'm
don't have a
saying
huge
is,
fandom for it still.
I'm four or five viewings away from it being my favorite horror movie of all time. That's what I want
Okay.
to make clear.
How many years is this going to
Not that
take?
many, because I'm actually going to watch it 5 times this weekend. I will
Okay.
report back to you on Monday.
Well, I'm looking forward to that article. I want at least 5,000 words, please.
And I will be converted to a total weeder. I don't want to say weeder whore, because that's not right.
You just said it, though.
Right? I'm thinking out loud, damn it. I don't know. I'm sticking with you, us nerd.
Could you say you're weeder horny for Ken? No. Mm-mm. Backing away from that one immediately.
Woo. Weeder horny?
Not proud of myself.
Are you a fan of the movie Shockwaves that he directed?
I haven't seen it.
You're not missing much. I feel bad saying that because, like, I want to like that movie because it's got Peter Cushing and Brooke Adams, and there's Nazi zombies that come out of the water. But it is deathly slow.
I had no idea that was the same guy. That's been, like, on my list since Anchor Bay or Blue Underground released it, like, a long time ago. Still haven't gotten around to it.
I think I've got it around here somewhere if you're interested in a rental.
I do pay a hefty rental fee, everybody. You do. So don't bother him about it.
And then Return of the Living Dead 3. I feel bad because I feel like I already said a piece on that movie, but I like how serious it is, how much it moves away from the comic tone of the first two movies and becomes this completely tragic romance and a story of a father and son who can't work out their differences, and it just has, you know, those amazing Yuznerd effects. Where the other day when we did the Candyman podcast, I was talking with Adam about Anthony Hickox, and he's a filmmaker who I don't always love his movies, with the exception of maybe like Waxworks, I think might be his most successful movie. I don't always love his stuff, but I know when I watch one of his films, there's going to be incredible effects. And Brian Yuzna's the same way. I probably like Yuzna's movies more than Anthony Hickox. But there are certainly, you know, there's still, like, for every society, there's a Faust Love of the Damned, you know, that's not very good, but it has cool effects. But I don't love that movie. So even when a Yuzna movie doesn't totally work like a later period Reanimator, the effects are always awesome.
Yeah, and Anthony's an extra in Return of the Living Dead 3, so that's fun.
Who is?
Anthony Hickox.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he's in the beginning in like a contamination suit.
I did not realize that.
That's why I thought you brought it up. I'm like,
No, not at all. It was.
But I gotta take that credit back.
It was because we were talking, I don't remember. Oh, we were talking about Hellraiser 3. And I said, oh, that's an Anthony Hickox movie, which means it's not that great, but the effects are really cool. And that's what I was thinking of with Yuzna, because sometimes that same accusation could be made of his work.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm definitely more of a Yuzna nerd, and I'm a lot more forgiving with him, I guess, because he kind of goes all the way with his imagination. Even if I can't go the full way with him, I respect it. But yeah, there you can definitely depend on a good, gory looking disgusting film with both of them.
And I really like Melinda Clark in the movie.
She's pretty amazing in it.
Yeah, like I'll admit I watched every season of The OC. I didn't love it. But after a little while, I was like, all right, I'm in. And then I bailed on it at a certain point because it had gotten so maudlin and dramatic and characters were being killed off. And I was like, I am out. But then I had to review the last season on DVD. And so I worked my way through it. And they clearly had course corrected. And it was a much happier, more fun show. And she was always really fun on that show, you know, just playing basically a soap opera character. But to see her in an earlier role like this makes me wish that she had had more big movie parts.
Yeah, no, she commits fully. And, you know, sometimes I think about acting and how it must be for actors when you have people like pointing cameras at you, walking around the set casually, maybe eating a donut, and you, like, you can't pull back. You have, even if it's a ridiculous concept, you have to put it all out there. And that's probably really hard, I would imagine. And so she's here with these prosthetics and a skimpy outfit, being very emotional and very relatable in a very unrelatable situation. And that's one of, you know, you have a few threads from the first one, which is, I guess, how they could throw the three on it. But with right. the zombie from the first one, when she says it helps the pain, they kind of took that and ran from it. It's kind of all centered around pain for her. And she solves like the sexuality of that, the heartbreak of that, the loneliness of that. It's a much more intense performance than you might think of, you know, in something called Return of the Living Dead 3.
Yeah, and I do feel like maybe it took people a little while to wrap their heads around it, because the series was at that point known for being more horror comedy, and this one isn't. You know, it takes the sadness of the James Karen self-immolation scene from the first film and combines it with Linnea Quigley's graveyard dance, sort of. Like Melinda Clark she's all of that sort of rolled up into one. And correct me if I'm wrong, because you just brought this up and I had forgotten that. It was really just like that they slapped the word trioxin on the barrels, right? That made it a sequel, that made it a part three.
Yeah, I would say so. There might so be this... tiny little things here and there, but
okay.
Basically that being what turns people into zombies. That's the connection.
But it wasn't originally written to be Return of the Living Dead Part 3, right?
Well, that I don't know. Okay.
I can't remember. I know they talk about it on the bonus features on the Blu-ray, but it's been a while since I watched it. I remember them talking about all the different effects houses that came together. I think there were like four or five different companies that all worked on this movie because they were, you know, working on a really tight budget, especially for what they were trying to pull off, and a pretty short schedule. And I know what's-his-name comes back for a small role from the first movie. Brian Peck. He played Scuzz in the first movie.
Oh, okay.
And I don't want to totally get into that, but I think that's a situation where maybe the less said about Mr. Peck, the better. If you're interested to learn more, just Google Brian Peck.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you when we're done recording, but
no, hold on. I'll you talk about something. I'm gonna Google
okay.
real quick.
all right. Again, I admire the fact. I won't say that this is my favorite film in the series, honestly, because I think that's overstating how good the first movie. That's understating how good the first movie is, and overstating how good the third movie is. But I do think it's really underrated, because I even appreciate, you know, how much of it is this tragic romance. And the fact that they see that through all the way to the end, where they really kind of run with the whole Romeo and Juliet idea and have these characters die in each other's arms. I don't know. I just respect that the movie is willing to remain sort of a romantic tragedy throughout. And is there a better zombie romance? There may very well be. Like, somebody may say Warm Bodies. But what is like another comparable zombie romance between like a living person and a dead person?
Oh, well, Cemetery Man, let's just talk about pure romance.
That's right. Well, okay. So at what point is she a zombie though? It's been years since I saw Cemetery Man.
Well, you have a bride when she's decapitated. Okay. She'll attack her own father for her groom.
I clearly need to rewatch Cemetery Man.
Yes, and we clearly need a really nice Blu-ray release. Powers that be out there.
That has to be a situation where, like, the rights are tied up, because I know every time I happen over to Scream Factory's Facebook wall, every third post is like, when are we getting Cemetery Man? And, of course, they've tried, you know, but...
They're like, oh boy, thanks for pointing that one out.
Right, huh? We have been sleeping on that. Oh man, turns out we've had the rights for years.
Yeah, but they don't shy away from it. It's all the scenes with them, they're very tender, they get very heartbreaking. Yeah, and when you see the poster, you see her being like, I'm beautiful and bad, you know.
She goes full Taryn.
Exactly. But she's a full character. She has a full interesting arc. We're there with her every step of the way. And you buy into it because you really see the degradation and what it does to her. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Return of the Living Dead 3. I've probably seen it about 7 times by now.
Yeah. I feel like while it was probably going on at the time, I don't think it was something that was being talked about, but this idea of like cutting, which really people started talking openly about in the 2000s, this idea of usually young people sort of self-harming, cutting their arms or something as a way of dealing with emotional pain that they were experiencing. And so by, you know, cutting their arms, it's like, okay, I can refocus the pain or whatever. That's exactly what Return of the Living Dead 3 is about. And I just think that's such an interesting idea. I'm not saying that it invented the idea of cutting, but I think it's interesting that it's working with those ideas at a time when we weren't really openly discussing that as a concept, even though it may very well have been happening in homes of young people across America. I don't know. But when I watch it now, I just think, oh my gosh, yeah, it was really sort of ahead of its time in terms of addressing this issue of cutting.
Yeah, that's a great point. I've heard people kind of throw the term S&M movie at it. I think mostly because of how she looks and she's deriving a kind of pleasure from the pain, but it's not to an exploitative level, in my opinion. I agree with you. It's literally how she's dealing with. Otherwise, she's going to lose her mind and eat the brains of, you know, the person she loves most in the world.
Right. Yeah. And I just, the extremities to which they sort of take her physical state. And I just remember too, you know, having seen it once in the 90s and then not seeing it for 20 years, the image of the guys that are like chasing them, one of them basically has his head sort of hovering above his body on his spinal cord. And that image stuck with me for 20 years. I mean, that was what I remembered about Return of the Living Dead 3. It was like, yeah, Minnie Clark, she's got the safety pins in the glass. And then there's that dude whose head is like bobbing around up and down above his body. It's just very inventive.
You're right. I think that's definitely the Yesna touch there with make a real character that you have to follow through a chunk of the movie who looks, you know, like that. It's part of its charm, definitely.
So is Yesna not more appreciated because in addition to making some really cool movies or being involved in some really cool movies, even as a producer, because he's also directed a lot of like movies that are not great?
I could be. I'm sure there's a lot of great theories about it. I think it can be really hard for directors, especially who have a strong point of view and maybe like a strong visual signature. Even people up there like Guillermo del Toro and Terry Gilliam, they have a hell of a time because they're, you know, I'm not saying visionaries, like they're perfect, untouchable geniuses. They just have such a strong point of view that they're not going to make the film if they can't have that. And probably with Yesna, we're talking about smaller budgets, and that's probably even harder to get off the ground. So someone completely on the outside of all of that, that's kind of the vibe I always got.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be almost impossible now for him to make a movie the way he wants to make it because practical effects have more or less disappeared and been replaced by CGI, but practical effects were always such a part of his aesthetic.
Yeah. I like to think he never used them as a crutch. He just loved them so much and was able to really create those great stories and memorable characters using them. It might have just been, you're so much of a time period that once that time period's over,
yeah,
you're a little out to sea.
Yeah. Although he is now producing Beyond the Gates too, so that's very exciting.
Yes, that I was very excited to hear that.
Right?
And I know you were probably mildly excited about that as
Well,
well.
sure. I mean, we got this movie that I love, and they're like, oh, yeah, are you a Yuz nerd? Guess what? Peanut butter and chocolate. Boom.
Well, if they need to raise any money, I'm sure you'll let them use the Yes Nerd idea for some shirts or something.
I will. Anything else about the Return of the Living Dead movies that you want to say before we wrap up?
Well, they're uneven, they're strange, they're all over the place, and I love them. I think they're really unique. Before we get into any raves, I couldn't tell you about any of that. But with the first three, I think it's just a nice little weird encapsulation of what you can do with horror when you just try different things. And you'll fail, you'll succeed, maybe you'll have a little quiet success. They're kind of audacious, and I just love them.
Well put. Have you ever tried to marathon all three of them?
Oddly enough, no. I've done it with the first two, but no, I need to do that. What about you?
Well, I don't know. No, I haven't. And I don't know how well that would play, just
Exactly.
because the first one's so fun. The second one is like a weird, distant echo of the first one. And then the third one is such a left turn and such a different emotional experience that you're kind of ending on a downer.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it almost, like I said, it belongs almost as part of its own franchise, or not as part of this one, I should say. Yeah, I don't know. That
What about a reverse
reverse
marathon?
marathon,
You can go out on a
I
high
think
note.
reverse marathon might be the way to do it.
All right, I'm going to try it. I'll report back.
I'm genuinely excited about this.
Okay, great.
Before we wrap up, can you remind everyone where to find you on the internet, please?
Okay, the best place is on Twitter. I'm Scrawfish, and all I do is harp on if I write something or if I'm on a podcast, it'll be there. So, yeah.
She's on a lot of podcasts, guys. So.
No, I'm not.
Well, this was awesome. This was super fun, and I'm really glad that you were able to come back on, and would love for you to come on regularly and not just during these theme months. I mean, it's totally my fault that I'm not blaming you at all for that. It's just
Well, it took me about 4 months to wear you down to grudgingly let me back on again.
No.
So
You
hopefully I
are
can do it when you're doing like a St. Valentine's Day massacre thing or
perhaps. No,
something.
you are welcome back anytime. There are all kinds of movies I'm sure we can talk about. People are dying to hear us talk more Code Red. So as soon as you watch The Forest, we'll do a whole episode on The Forest. But as always, please continue on with the Scary Movie Challenge. Every time you watch a movie, write a 7-word review. Find more of our content at fthismovie.com, including excellent articles by Stephanie. We are on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and wherever you find podcasts. We're on Twitter at fthismovie. Or you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And I just want to say thank you once again. This was super fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
We've got one more show coming up this Scary Movie Month. Everyone, I think most of you know what it is. I'm not sure I'm going to make it, but we will talk to you next week.
Listening to FS Movie.